Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. A 50-50 chance advanced knowledge the 9/11 attacks were to occur. We've got that story plus another vaccine black op. But first, on this rather large episode 559, Julian Assange freed. And his freedom a huge blow to detractors. No physical harm to anyone by the leaks. Grabbing this from Zero Hedge, if you hadn't heard, those are the images the world's been waiting for, unless you're neocons, neolibs, NatSec hawks, killery types. Free at last, WikiLeaks said in a post. Upon Julian Assange emerging from his plane after landing in the Australian capital of Canberra, Assange raised his fist on the tarmac, lovingly embraced his wife Stella and his kids and family. His guilty plea arrangement with the United States was a success. During the Wednesday morning stopover and court appearance in a U.S. district court in Saipan, the 52-year-old Assange formally pleaded guilty to obtaining and publishing U.S. military secrets. One of Assange's lawyers, Jennifer Robinson, said at the hearing that the whole ordeal, quote, sets a dangerous precedent that should be a concern to journalists everywhere. The thing that is tempering any sort of wild cheering about this, although anybody getting out of a cage, generally a nice thing. During the hearing, he appeared emotional and there were moments of humor and laughter and interaction with the judge. This according to the Guardian, that corporate news outlet who shared all his illegal activities but somehow get a free pass along with the New York Times. When the judge questioned whether satisfied with the plea conditions, Assange responded, it might depend on the outcome. Immediately drew some laughter in the courtroom. Chief Judge Ramona Manglona said at the start, well, not many people recognize we are a part of the United States, but that's true. At the end, she pronounced, it appears this ends with me. I hope there will be some peace restored. Crucially, this judge said, this marks a significant blow to Assange and WikiLeaks detractors who have long maintained that the leaks, particularly the Iran and Afghan war logs, put intelligence officers and foreign assets in danger and may have gotten some killed, like the journalists murdered in the collateral murder video we got. Manglona explained that the key to the deal for his freedom was that he already served years in a notorious and harsh UK prison, but also noted that no physical harm was actually caused due to Assange's actions. You stand before me to be sentenced in this criminal action, I would note the following. Timing matters. If this case was brought to me sometime near 2012 without the benefit of what I know now, that you served a period of imprisonment in apparently one of the harshest facilities in the United Kingdom. James, I still wouldn't count out Killery just droning this guy, as she opined. And I really, this might have been one that I might have broken the news to you and Brock. I was pretty surprised when all of this seemed to break out of the blue. I think this has to be a pretty baller Brandon move. Now, Joe Biden can roll into the first presidential debate tomorrow night as I come to you and say, I made weed more legal than ever and I freed Julian. Obama and DJ Trump didn't do either of those things. Do we know what's in the plea deal? Will we find out what's in the plea deal right after we get the Epstein client list?
Yeah. Holding my breath now. Well, in the meantime, we can see the actual guilty plea itself, and I will throw in the link to the actual court document where you can read about how Julian Paul Assange and Chelsea Manning, blah, 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 conspired to commit the following offenses against the United States. A, to receive and obtain documents, writings, and notes connected with the national defense, blah, blah, blah. B, to willfully communicate documents relating to the national defense, blah, blah, blah. C, to willfully communicate documents relating to the national defense, blah, blah, blah. In furtherance of this conspiracy and to accomplish its objects, Assange and Manning committed lawful and unlawful overt acts. Signed, Julian Assange. No, he doesn't sign the actual document here, but that's what he's putting his name to. Yes, guilty as charged. Now let me free. Okay, yay! So what does this actually mean? Well, in order to get a handle on it, you can take a look at what he was actually charged under, which is 18 U.S.C. Code Section 793, specifically G. If two or more persons conspire to violate any of the foregoing provisions, blah, 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 then they're guilty of the object of the conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. All right, so you can actually read about the actual charges themselves, but so what does it actually mean? Well, we could turn even to someone like Charlie Savage, who I think quite rightly notes in Assange's plea deal sets a chilling precedent, but it could have been worse. That the agreement means that for the first time in American history, gathering and publishing information the government considers secret has been successfully treated as a crime. This new precedent will send a threatening message to national security journalists, who may be chilled in how aggressively they do their jobs because they will see a greater risk of prosecution. They go on to cite Jameel Jaffer, executive director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. He's basically pleading guilty to things that journalists do all the time and need to do. It will cast a shadow over press freedom. But not the same kind of a shadow that would have been cast by a judicial opinion holding that this activity is criminal and unprotected by the First Amendment. So it could have been worse, guys. This could have gone to trial, and they could have ruled it as a case precedent in law that this is an illegal activity. As it is, he just pleaded guilty to it, so I guess we don't get that judge ruling. Yay. But this does kind of show that I think the people who were talking about the whole Assange case and the reason why, even if you don't like Assange or whatever you think about him, you need to support him because this is about First Amendment and journalism and reporting. Absolutely, yes. So you lost. That's what this is. Or at the very least, you didn't win. He didn't go to trial and get found innocent because, no, of course, this is not a crime. No, he pleaded guilty. So this is certainly not a win. It's nothing to be celebrating about on the big scale picture. For people who personally, his friends, his family, his personal supporters, I understand why, yes, celebrating getting let out of the cage and all of that. But in terms of the overall picture of this, this is not a win. For people who want my take on Assange, well, I provided that in Questions for Corbett number 44, What's Your Take on Assange?, where I pointed out that me personally, I have my reservations about Julian Assange and his quote, "I'm constantly annoyed that people are distracted by false conspiracies such as 9/11, when all around we provide evidence of real conspiracies for war or mass financial fraud, like, oh, that 9/11 pager story that WikiLeaks broke, where they sent out the hundreds of thousands of pager messages on 9/11 where people were talking about Osama bin Laden. Wow, that's the hard-hitting kind of leaks that WikiLeaks was responsible for. And if you don't understand how a platform like WikiLeaks is such a perfect intelligence cutout tool for intelligence agencies to strategically leak documents that they want to be out there, if you don't understand that, regardless of whether or not Assange or WikiLeaks had any idea how they were being used, if you don't understand that, then you do not understand anything about intelligence agencies or how they work. Having said all of that, okay, great, yes, Julian Assange is out of prison. Yay. Win? No, this is not a win.
James, it's essentially, they didn't make a tyrant act like a tyrant and rule that he is an evil, guilty man and they'll murder him live on TV and The Running Man. He acquiesced. Now, again, I haven't sat in a cage for decades, and I don't know, they might try and get you to claim you were involved in things that never existed, like a lot of the other so-called 9/11 terrorists. But that's like, you know, we didn't make you get the vax. You decided on your own. It was the best thing. You were making the best decisions with the knowledge that you had. But yeah, James, if he's the Bitcoin ghost, if that's a really interesting story, his connections to Nakamoto, or what any of it is, if he's a cult member from the family, or even as I heard in my own chat, that's not him, that fat bastard, that's not even Assange, he's what this some crisis actor they got on the plane. And space is fake. Even if all that's true, that doesn't mean he should be in a cage. Again, for doing the work the Guardian will not do. I think a little bit of good, not unmitigated good news for this New World Next Week episode 559 gets us off to the races, and holy moly, you just said it right there, 9/11. We got all the classic stories for you. Newly released video shows Saudi man filming locations ahead of 9/11. A 25-year-old video has come to light of a man identified by the FBI as a Saudi intelligence agent filming locations in the center of Washington 3 months before Al-Qaeda decided to carry out the 9/11 attacks. The footage, shot in the summer of 99 and in the possession of the FBI, unsealed in a court action by families of victims of 9/11 who claim that Saudi Arabia's government was complicit in the event, which the country's ruler deny, obtained by CBS and shown on the hottest news show around, 60 Minutes. The video includes commentary from the man, Omar al-Bayoumi, around various locations in the city, including the Washington Monuments, entry points, security arrangements of the U.S. Capitol building, and referring at one point to a plane. The Capitol is believed to have been the target of one of the planes before its hijackers, overwhelmed by the passengers, causing it to crash into the Pennsylvania countryside, as legend has it. Saudi authorities have long and strenuously denied complicity or support for 9/11, as does Bayoumi. Lawyers for the Saudi government have filed for the family's case to be dismissed, with oral arguments due this summer. The film was initially found by UK investigators in Bayoumi's flat in the days after 9/11, when he was a PhD student at Aston University in Birmingham. The flat also contained an address book that lawyers for the family say contains the contact details of officials in the Saudi government at the time. Scotland Yard gave the footage to the FBI. Saudi Arabia always denied that Bayoumi was its agent, long been the subject of speculation due to his links to two of the alleged hijackers, Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midar. An FBI report, again, it's like classic names from the past, James. An FBI report declassified in March 2022 presented evidence of a 50-50 chance Bayoumi had advanced knowledge the 9/11 attacks were to occur from his relationship with Hazmi and Midar. Another bureau report declassified the year before that says he gave significant help to the pair after their arrival in the U.S. and communicated with a key logistics facilitator for Osama bin Laden each time he assisted them. The video was shot over several days and is of somewhat grainy quality. Starts in Arabic saying, "Oh, beloved, esteemed brothers, a greeting to you, blah, 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 American capital city." Pointing out the Washington Monument, he talks about going there and reporting to you in detail what is there. He notes the proximity of the airport. Focusing on cars outside an unidentified building, he says, "They're cars. You said that in the plan." The FBI claims that when Bayoumi was shooting the video, he was with two Saudi Arabian diplomats who in the bureau said had ties to Al-Qaeda. So he's got some intelligence handlers with him, James. And I asked you before we started shooting, have you watched the video? Yeah, because you said it's 59-second nothing burger. You talk me down from the excited ledge.
Yeah, exactly right. So every single person watching this right now should pause this video, go down, scroll down in the show notes. I will put in the video direct link to GooTube of the 59-second video that CBS has kindly provided us, obviously cut up from the larger video exhibit that they have access to, that has such scary and ominous and foreboding parts as Al-Bayoumi pointing the camera at some building and saying, "And we come back once more to this building, whose name I don't know as of yet," and other really scary parts that show that he was a terrorist mastermind plotter. It's truly a nothing burger. But hey, again, don't take my word for it. Go watch the video for yourself and see if you think this is, oh my god, slam dunk case, no doubt about it. This is clearly a 9/11 mastermind at work. Well, anyway, that's what they want you to believe. And hey, I'll throw in the link to the CBSNews.com article on the 60 Minutes piece. Investigators for 9/11 families examine video taken by man with ties to Saudi intelligence referencing a plan. Yes, he does use the word plan, or at least that's the FBI-supplied translation, at one point in the video. Yay! Okay, he says, cars, according to plan, or something like that. And it's like, what plan? This would not, of course, stand up in any court in the universe that wasn't a kangaroo court that had already decided upon the guilt of the person being charged. But regardless of all of that, yeah, well, hey, it opens the conversation on Bayoumi. Who was Bayoumi? Well, we could turn to such things as the San Diego Reader, which nearly a decade ago had a pretty extensive breakdown on what was Omar al-Bayoumi doing in San Diego, that does note some of the main parts of the story that we know about. For example, Bayoumi just randomly stumbling into al-Hazmi and al-Midar right after they got off the plane in the U.S. Oh, by the way, where were they? They were coming from that super secret al-Qaeda conference in Malaysia that the CIA knew about. They tracked them, they were following them, and then they lost them, and they were just gone. Who knows where they went? And oh, they have U.S. visas, but we will delay telling the FBI about that for 18 months. Because there's no way that could be possibly useful information. Anyway, Bayoumi randomly stumbles into these guys right fresh off the plane. And he decides, hey guys, why don't you come with me to San Diego? And he gets them an apartment. He literally pays for their rent. An apartment that, by the way, just happens to have an FBI informant living in it. All of this, I mean, 18 trillion parts of this stupid story, this twisted tale. As I say, the San Diego Reader has all of those parts, but if you want to understand what they mean, I would humbly suggest you go back to my PFT Live Debunking the 28 Pages interview that I did on Press for Truth Live back again nearly a decade ago, talking about this and what it means. Also, of course, False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda, where you can find out more about that Al-Hazmi Al-Maidar story and how they play into all of this. But long story short, what is this really about? Why, after 20 years, are they suddenly, hey guys, look at this video. We've suddenly dredged up, and now you're allowed to see it. Why? I wonder why. Oh, that's right. It's because what has been the big story, at least in the alt media for the past couple of weeks, that big, oh my god, the petrodollar agreement is over. They didn't renew it. It's done. Which, you know, asterisk is total baloney, totally a complete misinformation story, because there is no petrodollar agreement that was signed and that needs to be renewed or anything of that sort. There are related agreements between the US and Saudi, but the petrodollar system is a system, and it is still alive and well and functioning. But clearly there are indications that Saudis are threatening to move towards a petro-yuan, or at least out the side door from the petrodollar system. So if you want more about that petrodollar story, I'll throw in a link to three good articles about it. The Truth About What Is Happening to the Petrodollar, Sense and Nonsense on Petrodollars, and Saudi Arabia, the Petrodollar, China, and CBDCs, which make clear that no, the petrodollar system is still functioning, still well, but it is showing signs of age, and there are definitely shifts happening. And as I have pointed out for years, as Kevin Ryan, I think, coined the phrase, the whole 28 pages, Omar al-Bayoumi, the secret Saudi connection to 9/11 has always been nothing other than a get into Saudi Arabia free card that the US government, Uncle Sam, can pull out anytime it wants to threaten the Saudis. Hey guys, you keep pressing this, we'll keep releasing this video that we have of Omar al-Bayoumi from 25 years ago with his secret, super secret planning. And we will let this lawsuit go forward between the 9/11 family suing Saudi Arabia. That's what this is. It's a big sword of Damocles hanging over the Saudi government that the U.S. whips out every now and then. The mainstream media dutifully reports whatever. Oh my God, new revelation. The Saudis may have been involved in 9/11. You see that go through the news wires, and then you see it shuffled off to the side as things simmer down between the U.S. and Saudi. We've been seeing this for years and years and years and years. It's such an obvious dynamic at this point, it surely doesn't need to be pointed out to the people in our regular audience, but for the normie McNormisons in the world, this is probably some good information to be sharing, that there's geopolitical machinations behind all of this.
James, the losing of the alleged 9/11 terrorists, it sounds like intelligence laundering. It sounds like the handoff was like, no, I lost him, which means the case was taken over by the other handlers when he landed in the States. The Saudis and the Israelis are sort of the cowboys and Indians to be filmed on the cowboy set whenever we need them. James, al-Bayoumi, I'm sure is all through the History Commons complete 9/11 timeline, if I could get to it?
If you could get to it, sure. I hope people downloaded the full thing like I did. And yeah, there's no end to the amount of information on people like Bayoumi. But as I say, False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda will have links and branch out. It doesn't talk about Bayoumi in particular, but it definitely talks about al-Hazmi and al-Maidar. Of course, people know that's available for free, 100% corbettreport.com/al-Qaeda. It's also available as a DVD purchase from the New World Next Week store.
We can talk more about that at the end of this episode. James, I was kind of speculating. Surely there's more than 59 seconds if this guy was running around the city for days and hours at a time. 59 seconds is all that we've gotten. Maybe someday people who are great at Freedom of Information Act requests can actually get the complete video. Because again, I'm all about as many puzzle pieces as we can for this, again, nearly 23-year story. All right, Captain Bringdown, here's our third and final story. Let's see what you can do to this one. Pentagon ran secret anti-vax campaign to undermine China during pandemic. I immediately sent this one to my mother. I'm like, wow, so COVID was a psyop. At the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, the U.S. military launched a secret campaign to counter what it perceived as China's growing influence in the Philippines, a nation hit especially hard by the deadly virus. The clandestine operation has not been previously reported. It aimed to sow doubt about the safety and efficacy of vaccines and other life-saving aid that was being supplied by China, a Reuters investigation found and was allowed to report it. Again, maybe it's just good timing for intelligence agencies to launder their information into the public. Through phony internet accounts meant to impersonate Filipinos, the military's propaganda efforts morphed into an anti-vax campaign. Social media posts decried the quality of face masks, test kits, and the first vaccine that would be available in the Philippines, China's Sinovac inoculation. Reuters identified at least 300 accounts on Twitter that matched descriptions shared by former U.S. military officials familiar with the Philippines operation. Almost all were created, as so much was, in the summer of 2020 and centered on the slogan China Ang Virus, Tagalog language for China is the virus. COVID came from China and the vaccine also came from China. Don't trust China, one typical tweet from July 2020 read in Tagalog. The words were next to a photo of a syringe behind a Chinese flag and a soaring chart of infections. Another post read, from China, PPE, face mask, vaccine, fake, but the coronavirus is real. After Reuters asked Twitter about the accounts, dutiful hipster Gates, the social media company, removed all those profiles immediately. So if you didn't archive all of those, if you didn't archive all those WikiLeaks, email leaks, all that stuff's been scrubbed from the web. Twitter determined they were part of a coordinated bot campaign based on activity patterns and internal data, now that you ask us about it. The U.S. military's anti-vax effort began in the spring of 2020 and expanded beyond Southeast Asia before it was terminated mid-2021, Reuters determined, tailoring the propaganda campaign to local audiences across Central Asia and the Middle East. The Pentagon used a combination of fake social media accounts on multiple platforms to spread fear of China's vaccine among Muslims at a time when the virus was killing tens of thousands of people each day, citation needed. A key part of the strategy, amplify the disputed contention that because vaccines sometimes contain pork gelatin, China shots would be considered forbidden under Islamic law. Or like I wish my Christian friends back here in the States would have said no over all the aborted fetal cells. The military program started under President Donald Warp Speed Trump and continued months into the evil Joe Biden presidency, Reuters found, even after alarmed social media executives warned the new administration that the Pentagon had been trafficking in COVID misinformation. The Biden White House issued an edict in the spring of 2021 banning the anti-vax effort, which also disparaged vaccines produced by other rivals, and the Pentagon initiated an internal review, Reuters found. But it is all good, though, James. This is the breaking news today. Our unelected Black Robe 9, commonly referred to as SCOTUS, just ruled in favor of fascism. Supreme Court rules for Biden administration in social media dispute with conservative states. The corporations and the state doing it in a bed that we pay for. Some relateds on this story. Covert Action magazine, that fantastic outlet, they've got a podcast, Pentagon Anti-Vax Propaganda Targets Philippines. Plus, Groomy McGroomerson, Macron, joins African leaders to kick off planned billion-dollar project to accelerate vaccines rollout. Please watch out, Africa. And of course, let's not forget that classic tale, CIA's fake vaccination campaign to find Osama bin Laden raises public health fears. July 14th, 2011. And then even a decade later, CIA's fake vaccine campaign to find Osama in Pakistan led to drop in child inoculations. This seems particularly relevant as public acceptance of the new vaccines against COVID-19 crucial to address the pandemic. James, this episode is quite the rich tapestry, as I like to say.
Well, I've so much. This story touches on so many different related things, and one of them would be very tempting to talk about how this demonstrates that when they're talking about fake news and mis- and disinformation spreaders online, etc., it's the old point of, oh, they're telling you about what other people are doing when they're really secretly saying what they are doing, right? So this is a big entire disinformation campaign that was being waged by the U.S. against its geopolitical enemies. But actually, maybe that falls into the trap of saying that what they were saying is mis- or disinformation. Because then you get into that weird situation that some people, for example, the BRICS are our saviors, Putin and Xi are going to save us from the New World Order. Those people have to then defend, you know, China had the good vaccine. Russia has the good kind of biometric faceless, face scanning, cashless CBDC nightmare. They're the good guys. So the China vaccine was a good one. It was one of the good ones, guys, that really did help people, save people from the scamdemic, right? No, I'm not going to fall into that particular trap. So in this case, I would say, oh, you know, okay, they were doing covert fake news spreading operations to spread real information, which should be concerning in and of itself. This opens the door, as you say, onto so many different related things. The shocked Pikachu face of people like, why don't you trust the government when they say these things are as good as gold and wonderful? It's, well, how about when they've demonstrably lied and disseminated fake information through cutouts and all of this about things that, oh, by the way, latest news confirms, yes, yet again, that COVID vaccines were deadly. Of various sorts, not just the Chinese ones. And I don't have it pulled up right now, but I will put it in the show notes. I just saw, I've seen many of these stories over the past few months, but there is just another one that there was a study that was pre-published. There was a preprint edition that was published on The Lancet about how the COVID vaccines were responsible for a large number of deaths. It got something like 10,000 downloads in 24 hours or something, but then The Lancet pulled it. And many months later, the lead author, through very persistent efforts, managed to get that study peer-reviewed and published elsewhere. So now it is part of the scientific record, as it were. Yes, the COVID vaccines were responsible for many deaths. But hey, wouldn't it have been nice to know that way back when The Lancet decided to pull that story? Anyway, this feeds into so many different things, but those are a couple that occur to me off the top of my head.
James, as you've said so many times these last few years, if you're just joining the reality-based independent news world, man, this episode's like a 101 episode of some of the most fundamental things, again, that we've been doing in our own respective works and doing together since, you know, around 2005 and 6. That is New World Next Week, episode 559. Yes, at the aforementioned newworldnextweek.com, you can find False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda, which, yes, is available for free at corporatereport.com, but it's a way to support our work. Again, you have never and will never hear any advertisements on any of our work, but if it resonates with you, we hope that you will support us. James, do you remember when people would buy DVDs, extra copies, and go take them to their libraries and donate them to places? Maybe that would be a good activity. Maybe we'll launch that campaign for the New World Next Week store here at some point. You can also, of course, get shirts and hats in ways that, again, help spread the word about Media Monarchy and Corbett Report. I heard from our buddy Richard Grove. There were some Media Monarchy members at the recent Pork Fest over in New Hampshire. He texted me and was like, hey, man, you got some fans here. I was like, are they rocking the merch? I should have probably been there DJing, but we'll have to work that out at a future date. James, as always, I get the exclusive audio aired on my stream. After my Thursday Morning Monarchy, the exclusive New World Next Week audio that only me, Brock, and Corbett have heard gets its very first airing after my Thursday morning show. James, that's at MediaMonarchy.com.
Well, there you go, James. If I'm Captain Bring Down, then you're Mr. Never Let You Down. So let's do it again real soon. Looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Take care.